So welcome again to the Raj Call podcast. I don't know what episode this is. I think it's 4 or 5. And I've got a very special guest with me today. I'm actually sort of really excited about this because she's been on the rise as an artist massively in the past few years. And I just discovered her through my wife, actually. My wife's a Check This singer out. And I was blown away, to be fair. Blown away by the versatility, the cleanness of the voice. And so I've got a very special guest, and I'm going to let her introduce herself. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, Raj. Thanks for that amazing intro. I'm Saloni, a singer-songwriter based in Milton Keynes and London.
Yeah, I'm going to put my voice up a bit so I can thingy. So, Saloni, as I said, Ruby introduced me I want a very informal chat. So Ruby showed me, because Ruby's always like, she manages me as well. So she's always looking for collabs, or she's always looking for other artists and inspiration and looking outside the box, because we tend to sort of look at music outside the conventional bits, which is why I like a lot of your music, because it's a very I love the fusion bits of it. I love the fusion parts of it. I love the different languages. It's absolutely phenomenal. I'm going to talk less. I can talk for England, really, but I'm going to stop that anyway. So So Ruby found out about yourself, and she showed me your music, and I thought, wow, she's very talented. And we actually met we didn't meet, but I think I saw you at a few of the medley I performed at recently. So were you at Wembley?
I was at Wembley. I performed at Wembley.
Yeah.
In Birmingham this year.
Yeah, Birmingham as well.
Yeah.
I was up, what day was you at Birmingham?
Birmingham I was on at the Saturday, because I had Wembley on the Sunday. So
okay, yeah. This is exactly the same as me then. Yeah, I was at Wembley. Yeah, so but I must have missed you there. I saw you at Wembley, but I didn't get a chance to chat to you because our car broke down. So we had to we got towed back to Birmingham.
Oh, God. Oh no.
Yeah, all fun and games. So okay, so let's make a start. So before we get into the music part, tell me where you're from, a bit about your background and your childhood. So yeah, I want to get to know you, basically.
Sure. So I was born and brought up in the UK. I just finished uni and all of that. So in still my like young adult phase right now. I've been doing music since I was about 4 years old. But there's no one in my family that's actually musically orientated. So that one came to a surprise. I can tell that story a bit later on. But I was born and brought up in the UK, but my parents are from India. So a lot of my ethnical influences are from India, South Asia. I think I was always quite a cultured child. I still am a cultured person. And I think there was always this thing about, yes, I was born in the UK and I have all these Western influences, and I was basically brought up in an English person, like through school and everything. But when I'd come home, it was just a different scene. It would be like Bollywood songs at home, Tollywood songs, or like I'd go to pujas and stuff like that. And it would just be the whole cultural side of things. And I feel like I had a split personality in a sense. Like it would just be the Western side, or it'd just be the like the cultured side. And I think it came to a point where I was like, that's not who I am. I'm not two different people. I am the same person. Mm-hmm. I started listening to stuff that was the mix of the two, and I loved that. And I was like, you know what, this is what I kind of want to do as well, but bring my own twist into it. Which is why, like, you'll see that I sing in all these different languages, because I think growing up, I listened to many different languages, because for me, language wasn't really a barrier. It was like, music is music, right? So that's why I kind of brought my influences of all these different languages, but also the Western side, and that's kind of where I am with my music now, bringing the two cultures together, which is basically me as an identity. And it's kind of something that I want, you know, other people that are like me, born and brought up in the UK or America or in like a Western scene, but have this cultural background that they don't know what to do with, and I want to be that representation for them, basically.
That's absolutely amazing. So I want to just drill you a bit about your school life, because My school, like when I was at school here, I'm a 1980s child, basically. So just probably a bit older than yourself. So when I was at school, a lot of my friends were like in an Asian area. So I didn't have that. You know what you're referring to with your split personality? We used to go into school and discuss the latest Bangra albums. All my friends were Asian.
Must have been really nice.
It was, yeah. So we used to go in there and sing songs and, like, you know, just whole had the whole thing. I was brought up in Handsworth, so a bit different. So what was your school life? Was it like that or was it different?
Completely opposite. So that many people ask me about this one, as in, like, when I see friends from school and everything, because I'm like to university, because I realized a huge shift from school to university. The area that I'm in and that I was brought up in, which is Milton Keynes, is a very, and I went to school in Buckingham actually, which is a very like Caucasian area, very white area basically. And we did, there were brown kids, like my family friends and stuff. We were the ones that, like, you know, did our 11 plus, got into a grammar school sort of thing. But the second we got into the grammar school, even though we were all brown, it was like everyone tried to be not brown, like they would try to fit in with the majority of the crowd, which was Caucasian. And I think there was that barrier of not being able to be who we were and trying to be something else that really like stuck to me. And I was actually one of those kids that didn't want to do that because I just didn't feel like I belonged in a way. And I would, like, for example, at school, there'd be like, if there was a cultural day, if anything, my mom would like push me. She'd be like, you know, why don't you do like a Bollywood dance or something? And, you know, but then all my friends would be like, don't do that. Why would you do that? Like, don't go on stage and, like, you know, put our culture out, because it was embarrassing in a way. And I felt like even though I wanted to do it, it did, like, I was surrounded by colored friends, my brown friends, but it was like there was just this barrier. And the most I would do was I would go and sing in assemblies, but it wasn't Asian stuff. It was Western stuff. Even that, like, my friends would be like, oh my God, how are you going up on stage and like performing and stuff like that? Because I think there was just I don't think it's there anymore in the same school, but now, but when I was there, slightly racist, but it was like, it wasn't directly racist. It was just, you know, in the backlog. And so being able to fit into that sort of a school, I didn't realize it then, but as I got out and went into university, where I felt so much more inclusive, I was able to, like, you know, be my true self, both cultural and like Western as well, and kind of, you know, actually be the blend. I realized how much of a, not an outcast, but like how different I felt in school. And I didn't realize that when I was at school, because I just thought that's how life is. It was only once I got out of it that I realized that the school that I was in was very segregated in a way.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I do sort of relate to what you're saying, because I had a split personality in terms of, like, even though at the school I had my friend circle, I had a lot of my outside circle was stronger. So my friends outside of school was quite strong, and they knew more about my musical side, even though, but I used to be associated with bands because a lot of my family members and stuff are from like Bangra bands and stuff like in the 80s and 90s. So yeah, it's quite interesting you say that. So it must have been quite like, because I had an issue when I was at secondary school where I was trying to sing. I was in the choir and stuff, but I felt embarrassed about it. About singing, like, because especially as a guy, it's a bit different for a girl. Like, as a guy, you think, oh, why is this guy singing like Christmas carols and, you know, that kind of thing? Did you have any of that sort of?
Yeah, so like I said, like, even I would go on stage and perform, and that was, I mean, huge thanks to my parents, because I think they were the people that sort of pushed me to do it. And if I didn't have that, like, you know, that bravery or like that sort of, if I didn't have that push, I probably wouldn't have gone on stage, and I probably wouldn't be pursuing music like I am now. So I'm very thankful for my parents to do that. But yes, I did sort of feel that, because again, I don't know if this is racism. I'm still trying to figure out what it was, but it's also in the past. So I'm kind of leaving it in the past in a way. But there would be these Caucasian girls singing in front of assembly. And I'd be singing in front of the assembly, all different occasions, but somehow I was the one that was being made fun of, not them. And I think I think there was that sort of being different, like I guess being a different color or something like that. It did have a slight effect more than it would if you were a white female or a white man or something in that school. So yeah, I did feel a bit awkward, but I'm glad I did it, because it was a big challenge that helped me get through and, like, you know, helped emotionally bring me, like, emotionally harden me a bit, basically.
Yeah, because when you go on stage, you need that sort of, exactly, like, you don't care what the obviously you do care. I don't mean like you don't care, but you know what I mean? If things go wrong, it doesn't matter. You're still going to go there and do it.
The amount of times I've forgotten like a lyric on stage or something, you've got to not let that affect you and just carry on. So yeah, you need that sort of, I forgot what the word is, but you're trying, like, resilience. Yeah, that's what it is. You build that resilience, just kind of, you know, push it on the back burner and just move on. And like, you can't delve on the past. You've just got to, you know, carry forward.
I'll tell you, one of my first performances I did live at a school. It was at a school. And you know when you just start singing, I don't know whether you had this. Like, I'm going to ask you about your singing background in a minute. But I went and singing. And I just used to sing. When you sing with musicians, it's different because you've got to get the right key and stuff. So I'd go in there and like belt the thing out and realize I was out of key. I was in the wrong key and stuff. Though, like, as you get experience, you start playing with musicians, you get that. So that was one of my embarrassing moments. I think, what's going on here? But you live and learn, don't you? It's just, yeah. Awesome. Yeah,
my embarrassing moments are probably forgetting lyrics on stage. And sometimes I still do it, but it's just one of those things that you kind of get through.
Don't you find that weird? Like, you write your own songs, but yet you forget your own lyrics.
And I think, other than artists, people don't actually understand that, because I once put this story out, because I had every time I have a show, for example, the week before, I'm listening to my songs on repeat. As sad as that is, I have to listen to my own songs. Exactly. So I remember my lyrics and everything. So I put it on my story once, because I do these day in the life. So one of those day in the lives, I was actually listening to my playlist of my songs. And I put this story up. I was like a poll. Is it weird? Like, is it just me? Or do people forget they forget their own lyrics? Everyone's that are artists click the yes button, like, you're not alone. Everyone that wasn't an artist actually clicked no. Who on earth would forget their own lyrics? But I think it's an artist thing that, like, if you're an artist, you'll understand, but if you're not, I don't think you realize how difficult it is to remember your own lyrics, because you're writing all these songs and you've got to remember covers as well. And on top of that, my memory, I have a memory of a goldfish, let me not lie. So it's actually really tough to remember your lyrics.
Yeah, slowly. I can actually relate with you with that. I'm terrible with my lyrics. I think I have one or two songs which I never forget, even cover songs. I have few cover songs which, no matter where you are, you can form the whole, you can ballot. But the rest of them, if you ask me now, I get a clue.
Yeah, I get that. And I think for me, like, those covers are the ones, like the first ever song that I would have performed or something, that those are the ones you remember, but everything else you just forget.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So okay, I'm going to go into songwriting a little bit later. So tell me, we talked about your singing background. So you're at school, and you said, I think, I don't know whether it was in the podcast or early on before we had started the podcast, that you started singing at the age of 4. Is that correct? I think I've lost you. I might have lost you. Let me have a look. Hello. Yeah, sorry, I lost you for a second there. It's my internet just went a bit funny. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't hear what you said.
So what I said was, you started singing at the age of 4. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you want to expand on that? What do you mean by singing at the age of 4?
Yeah, sure. So age of 4 is actually when my parents found out I could sing. Maybe I sang before that. I don't remember. Off my memory, I don't remember. But I'm actually not from a musically orientated family. So me even having a voice came to a surprise to my parents, as in like a singing sort of voice. So, you know, in school, we'd learn our Christmas carols and everything. And we went to Skanderville to a temple for Christmas one day, when I was 4 years old. And one of the nurses there actually asked me to sing a Christmas carol. And my parents didn't know I could sing. So they were like, oh, I don't think she can sing or something. And then I actually sang a Christmas carol. And that was the first time I think they heard me sing. And once they heard that, they were like, oh, wow, like, our daughter has a voice. Like, we should put her into singing lessons and everything. And that's when I started Carnatic singing lessons, which is Indian classics and South Indian classical music. So I did that. That was my base, basically. Carnatic music was my base. I'd perform on stage, all these Aradhanas and stuff like that. And then I went into like competitions, but I'd start do like Bollywood stuff, Bollywood or Kollywood and Tollywood, which is Tamil, Telugu and Hindi sort of songs. And then this was before I went into secondary school, I think, or just as I started secondary school. But then as I went along with school, I started to discover more of the Western scene. And then that's when I would, you know, listen to Taylor Swift, Bruno Mars and all of that sort of vibe. And that's when I started performing in assemblies. I put myself into competitions, but on the Western side. And at that point, around 12, 13, a label had scouted me out for artist development. So they took me on as one of their artists. They told me that it's not just about singing, but it's about, you know, songwriting, having that performer sort of performer face, speaking to the audience, all the background stuff like PRS, copyright, all of that stuff. So it was like the whole bundle. And then eventually after I had this crash, this course of over a few years, it was like an artist development camp, and they took me on their label side. And that's when I released my first EP, which I think I was 16, 17. I was 16, so it was in 2017.
That's amazing.
And then I, after I did a couple of EPs, which actually went into the iTunes charts for India and the UK, I realized that's not completely what I want to do, because I was only doing English stuff. I was writing my music in English. And this is also probably because the label that I was working with they only had the English background. They didn't really have an Indian background. So they could only support me on the English side. Mm-hmm. And so then I was like, okay, I'm not too sure if this is the direction I completely want to go into, because I don't know if I fit completely. So I actually left the label in the end. I took a gap year after school, after sixth form, and I started doing these mashups. And that was when I truly started to realize like how Western music and Indian music can go together. And so I used to do mashups of like a pop song and a Bollywood song, and I do loads of them. To eventually another producer found me on social media, and he helped launch me into the British Asian scene as a songwriter, artist sort of thing. And that's when I released my first ever bilingual single in Punjabi and English in 2022 or 2021, I don't remember. But then, yeah, 2022. And then here I am just doing the same thing, you know, releasing multiple languages onto one sort of track. But what I try to stick to is have a pop R&B or like a Western sort of beat. Mm-hmm. I'm actually exploring garage right now, but different sort of beats that are more towards the Western side, but then bring in my Indian influences through my languages. So yeah, that's kind of like a sum up of how I started singing and my journey. In the end.
That's phenomenal. Honestly, you should be proud of yourself. Yeah. So, okay. So I'm going to dwell a bit more into the singing part. And so you're learning classical at four, Carnatic classical. So after that, were you learning with a teacher, or was it at home, or was it online?
I mean, back then, I don't think there was much of...
Yeah, there wasn't online. So
it was all in person. So I actually started Indian classical singing and dance together. So I did Carnatic and Bharatanatyam. My teacher was Tamil, so that's where I had a lot of Tamil. Even though I'm not Tamil myself, I had a lot of Tamil influence in my music. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Carnatic, there's not really a language to it. It's just Sanskrit sort of thing. So, I mean, yeah, I started doing that about 4 years old, and I did grades in that basically as I grew older, and then switched teachers and started to do Carnatic, but then also the Bollywood, Tollywood and Kollywood side. Mm-hmm. We used to do shows and then competitions. And so I carried that on with that teacher. But alongside that, I started this artist development camp, which was the Western side.
So that was, so the artist development camp with the label, they were teaching you more the Western side of it. Was there out of curiosity for myself, was there a vast difference between styles of training?
100%. I think that was my biggest challenge growing up, trying to figure out how to switch from one another, but also, you know, somehow link it, because... Mm-hmm. If you're doing Carnatic, for example, it's all in the chest voice. So it's all like, you know, deep voices. There's no high ends or like basically your head voice and stuff. I don't know if this is going to make sense to anyone that's not an artist listening into this. But obviously they're two, I mean, I'm sure you understand.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so with the Carnatic side, I mean, forget about Western, even from Carnatic to like movie songs, movie songs, they sing in their head voice. But if you're a heavily trained classical singer, it's tough to go into that headspace. That requires a different sort of training. Mm-hmm. But I was lucky enough that my teacher was classical, but she also knew some of like the movie sort of songs. Mm-hmm. And so she helped me bridge that gap. It was like singing into a corner of a wall, so you're just hearing yourself and all these exercises. But yeah, so the teachings were very different. And I think I was getting two different sorts of teaching, and it was really on me to try and bring it together. But I would say that my Carnatic teacher, my second Carnatic teacher, really helped with that, because I think the Bollywood side was helping me be that bridge in a way.
It's because what I find, I mean, I haven't done Carnatic. I've done Hindustani classical to a certain point, but I could never, because the amount of practice that's required to get a little bit good at it is like hours and hours a day, and you haven't got that time. Well, I haven't, at least. I'm working and stuff. So, but what I find, I don't know whether your experience with Carnatic is the same as this, is that you almost sing with your natural voice when you're doing the classical part, and you're just singing. But whereas when you start singing other genres, you have to put on a voice. If that makes sense.
That's exactly what I mean by, you know, singing in your chest voice.
Yeah, yeah.
Than any other genre that if you're going higher, you tend to shift into your voice. So that's what I mean by the two different sort of voices.
Yeah, so. Fantastic. Yeah. So I find that challenging, especially when I because I'm not I've hardly ever tried Western singing, mm-hmm. but when I try, I'm having to do that far more, and it's quite difficult for me. To do that, because even like my Indians, like the Punjabi singing, a lot of it still has that little bit of your natural, like I don't know whether it's natural, because it's like the folk sort of thing. Folk has a natural element in it, you know, because it's part of your background. I'm talking from a Punjabi background, and folk singing like quite that kind of. Yeah, it's that, and it comes naturally because you're brought up with that. So, I do find it difficult to switch, which is why I've got great admiration for you, how you switch different styles. And I've even seen you do a bit of the Punjabi style as well. And I've got to admit, it's quite impressive the way you switch styles. Do you find that challenging to switch the styles?
Now it's gotten a lot easier, and I think that's because of practice and just doing it regularly. But mm-hmm. 3-4 years ago, yes, it was definitely a big challenge. Mm-hmm.
And what about sort of things in terms of accents and the language, pronunciation? What are your challenges with
that? I feel like that will always be a challenge, because I can't speak all these languages. Yeah. So I don't want to offend any other person that is native in these languages and I'm not pronouncing it right. And I think that is with anyone that's a multilingual singer, basically, because especially like all these playback singers that do sing in different languages, I'm sure it's really tough for them. And even when it comes out, like, people still complain, even though their voice is amazing, the pronunciation isn't always on point, no matter how much they try. And I think that's just that's something that maybe not always perfect, but you've got to try your best to get to. So when I sing in other languages, especially if it's recorded, for example, I'll try and get it checked by a family friend that's a native speaker, because they're most likely to be able to tell. And even they might not be 100% accurate, but it's better than probably what I would guess from listening to the song. Yes. So I try, and that's how I try to get my pronunciation as close to proper as it is. Obviously, when it's live, it could hit, like, it could go off how might not be perfect, but at least when it's recorded, I take a good few takes, I send it to someone that is native in that language and just get it checked, and if it's wrong, I'll re-record it, sort of thing. Because for me, I know how important, you know, getting that pronunciation right, and because it's the difference between meaning one thing and meaning something else if you get the pronunciation completely wrong. So that's why I know it's really important. But in terms of actually being able to sing in these languages, one thing I've always felt was that the reason I was able to grasp all these different languages was because if you know one in one area, you can kind of get all the other ones. So I'll take an example. So, for example, with Hindi, I picked up Hindi from watching movies and everything. So that's how I understood Hindi. And my parents speak it as well. So I grasped a lot of it from there. But then when you know Hindi, I mean, my pronunciation isn't 100%. I still need to get it checked with, like, my mom or someone else. But once you know that, it's very similar to Punjabi, or it's very similar to Gujarati and Marathi and all of that. So then I can get a few words, or like get at least a line, could sort of say it, but to get it perfect, I'll then get it checked. So I get close and then I'll get it checked again. And then same goes for like the South Indian languages. So I'm natively on Telugu. My Carnatic stuff was all Tamil. So that way I kind of had the two languages. And like, even with Tamil, like my teacher was there, because I would put that extra effort to actually try and get the Tamil right. My singing teacher would always say like, your Tamil pronunciation is better than all these actual Tamil singers, like my peers and stuff. And that's only because I'm trying to push a bit harder to actually, because I'm not Tamil. So I'm like, okay, I really want to do it right, basically. So anyways, so once I got those two languages, I was able to then get Malayalam, Kannada, Bengali. And so that way it was a bit easier that way. So I think it's when you know one or two, it gets easier to kind of go around. But that being said as well, like there's no, even if you don't know them, if you really try, I feel like you can push yourself to kind of grasp those languages.
Hey guys, sorry for the brief interruption to the podcast. I hope you're enjoying it. I just want to ask for your support. If you can support me, go and stream my latest track called Bahmarke on all streaming platforms. That'd be great. Thank you guys.
That's absolutely amazing. That reminds me of a story about the late Lata Mangeshkarji. She, I think, one stage she started singing like, you know, because more Urdu came into Bollywood at that time in the 1950s I could be wrong, but in that era, because the lyricists were Urdu lyricists. So she'd actually take on Urdu lessons. Mm-hmm. She actually took on the lessons, and that's how dedicated they were, which sort of reminds me of your story of how dedicated you are right now, which is pretty impressive. So pardon to you. So, okay. So, you carried on your singing and from there, what's your routine now? So after 16, I'm assuming that did you carry on learning, or did you just self-learn after that? As a base?
So Carnatic, I actually stopped. Some part of me is thinking either go back to that or start Hindustani. I'm still in that thinking process, trying to find the time to do it. But in terms of the Western stuff, so I have a vocal coach, and I usually tend to go to her once in 3 months, maybe, just to kind of top up. But in between, I do my vocal exercises all the time, at least 3 to 4 times a week, basically. And that kind of helps me go, to be honest, more than 4 times a week is good. So I try to go I try daily. I have this recording from my vocal coach, which is actually the Western side. And I do those. It's basically scales on a piano and like your trills. It's funny, like I'll go around the flat going
like all the time. Pros, yeah.
Yeah. So my flatmates have to deal with that. But anyways, doing those on a daily basis helps me keep my voice intact, sort of thing. And sometimes like vocal exercise can get tiring and it can get boring a bit. So what I'll do instead of doing a vocal exercise, I'll practice a song, and that will be like my vocal exercise for the day, sort of thing.
Yeah. Do you know where I get the best practice for doing drills and stuff?
In the bathroom?
In my car driving.
Oh, in the car.
I actually put the thumper on via the car speakers.
Okay.
Because I don't get disturbed.
Yeah.
I've got a long journey. I've got a hour drive somewhere. Thumb put us on. I'm going to work. Because one day a week, going to the office in Warwick. It's about an hour drive. So I put the thumb put on in the morning, do my low notes and do the drills and just do that. So
once I learn how to drive, that might be my go-to then.
is that your next thing? Yeah,
right, yeah, cool. That would be my go-to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's actually awesome, because also, you know, in the car, because it's like a closed environment.
Yeah,
you can hear your voice. You can hear all the mistakes and things like that. So so the other thing, I don't know whether you've ever done this, in Hindustani classical, you. This is not many singers do this, unless you're hardcore into Hindustani classical music, is pitch recognition, note recognition.
Yeah, I struggle with that.
It is solid. I think I can do probably the first four or five notes, and then as I always get stuck on. Is it the same in Carnatic? Saregama pa dha.
Yeah.
It's the same as. So I always get stuck on, like, say I'm doing the major scale from whatever pitch, because this is where the Western and Indian classical sort of differentiate, in the sense, because you've got like fixed notes in Western scale. So the only reason I'm saying this for the listeners, I know you'll probably know already, Sloane. Yeah. So I always find when I'm doing ma, because it's like it's almost in between that note. It's the only sharp note out of all of them. That's the note I struggle on, and so I'm constantly practicing on that note to get it right. But it's quite a struggle, the pitch recognition, so not recognition. Yeah, so I just wanted you to know your thoughts on that, whether you do it.
I mean, it's crazy that you've somewhat been able to do it. I've never been able to figure that out, and I guess that comes with practice maybe, but I think that's also, some people are naturally talented to be able to do that, and I think that's insane, because like, for example, some musicians that I work with who hear something and who just kind of figure it out, and I'm just like, you just heard it, how did you just get that on your piano? Like, that's insane. And I think that's super cool, and I think especially musicians get that at a better rate than vocalists. Yeah. From what I've seen, at least.
After you, sorry. I've been talking. No, I'm just saying there's the ear training part as well. I don't know whether you've ever done that.
No, I've not done the ear training.
Ear training's pretty tough, to be fair. It's I've got a piece of software called, I think it's Earmaster. So you do grades. You know how you got like the conservatoire grading, and you practice ear training. So like, say you've got a note, and you do intervals. Like, say you got an interval between sa and re. So you got, that's how I've used that to improve my pitch recognition, not note recognition. So you're doing intervals. Yeah. So if you're doing if you say we're going from sa to ga, I'd remember a song. It would be like, Tum dil ki sa ga pa. Okay. So that's how I'd remember the notes, and that's how my note recognition comes. It's a really good trick to do it, but it still takes a lot of practice. But if you know the songs, if you know a song that's got that interval in there, so sa to ga, which tum dil ki, which you know that song, don't you, from Dhadkan?
Actually, no, I don't know that song.
Remember the film Dhadkan with Akshay Kumar and Sunil Shetty and Shilpa Shetty? Tum dil ki dhadkan.
I've heard the song actually.
So you'd find a private song that you like personally, and you use that to train your interval. So that's how I learned a bit of interval training. I'm not an expert by any means. All right, so I'm just.
But it's good to hear, because I've not heard of this, so I'm really learning from you.
Yeah, of course, and that's the whole thing. So I'm actually learning quite a lot of you. So which is why I love these types of interviews I do, because I learn so much and I get an appreciation. And I hope it's a long-term friendship as well that we go as artists, because I'm quite a fan of yours now, especially listening to your music. So, okay. So I'm going to carry on now. That's enough about the singing. So yeah, songwriting. How did you start songwriting?
So songwriting, that happened through the artist development camp. Because one thing they said to me, they were like, as an artist, as a singer, there's only so much you can do. But if you want to make money out of your music and actually, you know, have a financially stable sort of future in your music, you got to songwrite, because all the money goes to the songwriter, whether it's PRS or PPO, everything is to the songwriters. So that's where that started, because I knew that I wanted to be an artist, and to be an artist, songwriting is part of that. So that's how I started with that. I'd still say that strong songwriting is not my strongest point of being an artist. My favorite part of being an artist is performing live on stage and everything. I love singing and performing live, but songwriting is part of the fact. And you know, it's a good way to sort of get some emotions out. So anytime I'm feeling something, I'll get that down. But again, that's not always the case, because sometimes a banger doesn't come from emotion. It comes from, you know, what's the you know, trending thing right now, or what's going to make a hit. And there's some analysis in it. It's not just what's from the heart sort of thing. But yeah, I think the initial few songs that I wrote were very, you know, from the heart, the kind of situation that I was going through, or my friends were going through. And then it came to a point where I was like, okay, I need to kind of write something that people would relate to, that maybe I don't feel too much, but I know other people will relate to. So I put that down. And then recently, like my latest single was a love story. So that's not a complete relatable one for me, but you know, it was relatable for many people. So that kind of, you know, from Bollywood movies or whatever, you get that inspiration from there. Yeah. But before that, I wrote a couple of singles which were very close to my heart, because it was about the kind of legacy I'd like to leave behind, women empowerment, you know, striving for what you love to do. And those for me, I know, stick a lot more personally, because I know that's like coming from my heart a lot more, because it's talking about you know, situations that may not be spoken about, like, it's not the norm to maybe speak about, because I mean, now it is, because I feel like a lot of people are talking about women empowerment, feminism, or, you know, like striving for what you love to do without thinking about the norms, thinking about what, like I said, is the normal thing to do. I think songwriting came to me at about, I think I was 14, 15 when I first started to songwrite. I remember actually the first time I songwrote was for my GCSE music piece, and that actually became the first ever song I released.
Wow, that's phenomenal. So in terms of your songwriting, do you, when you're songwriting, are you just referring to the actual poetic writing, or are you referring to the composition as well?
Okay. When I was referring to songwriting right now, it was actually the lyrics. Melodies I love to do. I think those come to me a lot more naturally than lyrics.
Yeah.
Okay? Because, you know, that's basically music, isn't it? That's the beats. Melodies that come. Yeah. Melodies I love to write.
So because just out of interest, so when I write, I don't actually write lyrics. Okay. I was composed first in my head, then write.
Okay.
So do you do the same, or is it the opposite? Or
so recently, actually, what we've been doing is I've been getting a beat, or I have an inspiration track, and I send that to my producer, and I'm like, this is the kind of track I'm looking for, maybe get something like this, and he'll send me a beat through. And then on that beat, I'll hum a melody, and I'll record that melody that I hum, like, and I'll think, okay, this melody sounds like a chorus melody, or this melody sounds like a verse, a bridge, and I'll kind of record them, or record a few random things, and then chop and piece them together through like vocal pumping. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have, by the end of the session, we'll have a whole beat that has all of these melodies written down in the structure of verse, chorus, but whatever, like however we want it. And then I'll take that back, and that's our demo, basically our first demo. And then after this demo, I'll go back and I'll think, okay, what do I want this song to be about? What lyrics can I get? Do I need someone to help me with the lyrics? Because when it comes to Telugu or Hindi lyrics, I usually tend, or like any other in South Asian language, I tend to get that written by someone else. I've only actually ever written my Telugu lyrics once, which is the latest one, which I was actually quite proud of, because I was like, well, I've actually written Telugu lyrics myself for the first time. But on a usual basis, I do get that written by someone else, because I think English comes more naturally to me, but these other languages, I mean, even though Telugu is my mother tongue, poetic Telugu is a bit different, so...
Yeah, it is. That's in any language, isn't it? Like, what you speak and then what you write in poetic forms, quite different. So you mentioned vocal comping, and the audience are not going to know what that means. Could you explain?
It's basically recording your vocals and then chopping things up or finding the best take. It's basically everything around your vocals. So sometimes I'll take like two takes. Sometimes I'll take four takes. Sometimes I'll take like 10 takes. It just depends on that particular line, but it's actually listening to each of the takes and seeing which one's the best one. Maybe the first half of the take is better than the second half, so you piece two together, and that way, that's more when you actually like final vocals and got the thing. Yeah. But when I mean vocal comping in like the first part, when I'm just thinking of melodies, I'm listening to the song and I am singing random melodies, and sometimes it will probably go completely off key, but I'm just randomly improvising. But then when I've got these like four different takes of completely different melodies, we'll listen back and I'll choose bits of each melody and then piece it together. So I would have never sung the, so if you hear, like, for example, my verse from my latest song, that's a really good example of what we did. We literally took like six takes, all completely different melodies, and literally chopped and pieced different melodies of different sections of each of those six takes. And then it became one whole thing. So yeah, that is like, it's just happening.
Is that the one with Bilal Shahid?
Yeah.
Nice.
And Bilal Shahid, I think he actually introduced me to that method. And before that, I'd never done that. I'd actually, you know, do a whole take in one go, and then maybe one bit I'll see and I'll piece it up. But usually it's like one take for a verse. But this time around, Bilal Shahid introduced me to this method, which I found quite interesting, and a method that I am using for my future songs.
See, I still do it the other way.
Oh.
What I do, I'll tell you the reason why I do it, because not for composing, but for when I'm recording a main vocal.
Oh, yeah.
I record the whole vocal in one line.
Yep.
Instead of doing little takes, then each bit, I'd listen to the whole vocal and think, which Bitney's doing again, and I don't keep the takes.
Oh, okay.
I overwrite it, because the reason why, if it's not good enough, otherwise if I get too many takes, you think, okay, which one shall I use? You get too picky.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Or
I do get that. But I think this is about the final vocal. So
yeah,
final vocals, I obviously try and get it done in one go. And sometimes I'll take three takes, but for the most part, it's the first take that's always the good take. I don't know why, but it's the first take that's always the good take. So I think I just do the takes for safety purposes, but usually the first take is what we go for.
Nice. It's nice to know different things. So which track got you, because I know you were on the BBC Asian Network Introducing, which track got you into that and how did you get into that?
So I think I was on Introducing for the first time as like Introducing Artist of the Week in 2021 December or November, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I released my mashups. I had a whole series of mashups that I was releasing on streaming platforms. So it was like, not mashups, but covers as well. So I did TikTok Thirsty mashup, which I collaborated with producer 2NV on. So that was from literally putting together viral TikTok songs together onto one beat.
Yeah.
So I released that first, and then I released something, a cover of Akiyamala with Pali Mataru. And then I released Desi 19T with Reveal. All of these are producers that I had on the track. And I think it was Desi 19, I think it was TikTok Desi Mashup that got me onto BBC Three Counties Radio's like radar. And because I think they had like a going around, Asian Network had an around the map Introducing Artists thing.
Yep.
So for the three counties, I was one of the three that they had. And that was how I got onto Asian Network's radar. And then from then on, it just got better and better. As soon as I started releasing original music, Asian Network took it on as they're introducing. And then it went on. And then it was not the first one, but I think the second one actually went onto their playlist. And now Asian Network's a friendly face to me. So it's all a journey over the past 2-3 years.
I love your mashups. I've got to say, they're really, really cool. Really cool. I especially like the songs you picked as well. With them, really cool. What's the Umbar Sariya one? Because
I'm
Punjabi, so obviously that's going to relate to me straight away, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think this a huge influence to the Punjabi songs was university for me, because in school I didn't actually know many Punjabi people, and I think that's just the area that I'm from. But when I went to university, I just met so many Punjabis. That was the only music I would hear for ages. I'm in London, so I guess it's just filled with loads of Punjabis. So any festivals that I'd go to, any club nights I'd go to, it was Punjabi music a lot, any Desi club nights. But I loved it. So I was like, you know what? I'll put this into my music because I love it so much. So yeah, that was a huge influence to like the Punjabi side of my songs.
The other thing I love about your music is that like Punjabi music has sort of been ingrained in the UK for quite a while. But I might be talking out of ignorance here, but there wasn't much Telugu music coming from here. So I'd class you as one of the pioneers, maybe? Would that be incorrect statement?
I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I guess yes, because I don't know anyone else in the UK, actually. I know that there was a Telugu artist that I met, but she didn't do anything Telugu. She just sung in English.
Yeah.
She was actually one of BBC Asian Network's feature sound artists, I think. But she didn't. She was Telugu as a person. I think she was half Telugu or something, but she never sang in it. So I've not seen anyone in the UK with a Telugu, and that's why even Legacy for me, I'd advertise it as UK's, you know, first Telugu English single, because I've just not seen it. And you know what, and I think that's part of what I say when I say I want to be that representation that I didn't have growing up. Because yes, I had Zach Knight, and Zach Knight was a huge inspiration to me growing up, because I loved the way he fused, you know, the trending pop stuff, but with like that Desi Bollywood influence. But I didn't see that for Tollywood, and that's kind of what I wanted to do growing up. So that's where I am. But at the same time, one thing that I want to like make clear with people as well, like, yes, I'm Telugu, and that I do want to be a pioneer for it. I do want to kind of bring that forward. But it's not just Telugu that's like, you know, a language. There's all these South Asian languages, all the languages I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And my goal is to bring all of them and sing all of them in my original music. Obviously, not all of them in one song, mm-hmm. but like eventually have all these different languages and songs that I release. Because like I did with the Telugu Bengali one that I've just recently released with Bilal Shaheed, Telugu, Bangla, and English. I tried to sing in Bangla as well because it's just a beautiful language and I wanted to bring that in. And I just want to do more of that going forward.
It is really cool though, because like I don't want to sort of keep going on about the Telugu stuff, but that's not there for the youngsters. Sort of like there's no representation, which is why I think it's a really positive thing that you're doing that, and hopefully other singers from that community as well will pop up.
And you know what? I think there's a big crowd in America. I have seen people releasing original Telugu songs. I don't think they fused Telugu and English together, but I've seen that they've like just released Telugu songs, and I think that's amazing. I think there's a scene in the US because I think just from what my parents have told me as well, when they were kids, for example, loads of people would be like, oh, I want to go to America and stuff like that, from like their villages and everything, not many to the UK. So that's why I think there's not much of a scene here in the UK. Yes, there's one in the US. So I think I want to try and bring that up in the UK and then, you know, take that global someday, hopefully.
Is there any reason why that's the case, that there's not much of a representation in terms of music? Is there a reason behind it? I'm talking out of ignorance because I don't know.
No, that's not ignorance at all. Because to be honest, I can't say I know it all myself either, because I obviously have just my perspective of it. But some part of me does think that with the Telugu community, it's, you know, not to be stereotypical, but kind of is like, even you know, any sort of South Asian, they'll be like, doctor, engineer, do this, that, like, that's your vibe. Don't do anything creative. And I think with the Telugu community, it's always been like, you know, go into IT or whatever, like into your typical, like, stable jobs. So we'd have, Telugu people would have their, you know, creative scenes like dance or singing and stuff. But I think when it came to actually making it into a career, it wasn't taken any further, which is why I'm so thankful to my parents for actually letting me, you know, not that they wouldn't stop me or whatever, but it's a big
encouraged part. It.
They encouraged it. And even if they didn't encourage it and I would still strive, like, yeah, maybe I would go ahead, but I probably, it would be a lot harder than it has been for me so far. So them having, being that support system and actually encouraging me to go ahead has helped. And I think that's also why there's not that many. I'm not saying that parents aren't being encouraging or anything. I just think it's a stigma that's still tough to sort of get around. And I'm sure maybe in the future, like, that will push out and there'll be more people out there. Hopefully, fingers crossed. But I think beforehand, it's just not been there as much.
So the other thing I'm going to ask you, this is a bit of a cliche question for you to ask, but being a woman from the Telugu community, you've come across, and like, sort of, I want to sort of think as an Asian woman as well, and also as a Telugu woman, have there been challenges? Because not only are you the first like Telugu artist, but you're the first woman Telugu artist as well, which is like phenomenal. Like when I was younger in the 80s, we had a lot of women artists in the Punjabi community, but then that died down in the 90s, and it was like up and down, and it's never been like prominent. So what are your challenges as a woman? I know that's a cliche question, but I like to know, because there's the side of the industry which is not, in my eyes, not quite right.
No, of course. And you know what, I think it's not just within the Telugu community, it's literally within the South Asian scene. Like, I did Wembley Mela the other day, and I mean, they probably didn't find the right artists and stuff, and maybe there weren't enough or whatever, but I was the only female headliner on that show. And that's crazy to think, because how are there all these males? There were about 10, 11 male, I don't know, male singers, and only me as a female artist. And I'm so honored to be there and be that representation, but there just needs to be so much more, is what I think. And yes, I think it's tough because, I guess there's not, well, previously there probably weren't as many doors open, or I wouldn't know completely, because I feel like I haven't had it as tough as people may think it would be, because I would say my struggles haven't been because I'm female or something. It's just general struggles of trying to go into the creative industry.
Yeah, as an artist.
And maybe, yeah, as an artist. And maybe there might have been some behind the scenes, but I've not focused on it. I've only really recognized the trying to go into the creative scene sort of struggles and the being a female sort of struggle. That being said, I think because my parents are the only ones out of the family that have actually come into the UK sort of thing from my dad's side, let's say. Mm-hmm. And so there is still that, you know, like my dad is from a village. So there is that village mentality within like my aunts and uncles and stuff. And I went back to India recently, like a while ago, and someone said to me, it was like, what will you do if your husband doesn't let you, like your future husband doesn't let you do music? What? And I was thinking, let me, I'm going to create my own passion. If I end up being with someone that's not going to let me do something, I wouldn't be with them in the first place. And this wasn't even a male asking me this. This was a female, like a woman telling me this. And I'm thinking, that's not right. That mentality right there, like it's that mentality that kind of is why maybe there's not enough females out there doing stuff like that. And in the moment, I really didn't know what to say. But after thinking about it later, I was like, that's just so wrong. Like to say that if someone's not going to let you do this, how are you going to, that's not it. You've got to be able to put that stand and just be like, this is my career and I am going to be that, you know. Again, I guess it's a bit of a cliche, you know, going out and doing what you like, you are your own person. You are your own sort of career. You don't have to rely on a man or something like that. And I guess that's a cliche thing, but I'm having to say this because I'm being told this, because it's like still out there somewhere. People are thinking in that way. And I think the word needs to get out there more that it's not about relying on someone. It's about being independent and creating your own journey sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So you're not going to believe it. Almost an hour's up.
Oh, that was so quick.
I don't know, I've only got you for an hour. So I won't keep you for too long. What's next for you?
Yeah. So there has been so much hype about my latest single, Ni Gundelona. And so I am just trying to create something that will live up to that hype and expectation next. So I'm working on some music right now, hopefully an EP towards the end of next year, and yeah, just writing more music. And I've now graduated from uni, so all things music, all eyes and ears right now. Thank you.
Yeah, so where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all social media platforms as Saloni_music, Saloni music. That's Instagram as Saloni_music, TikTok as Saloni.music, Facebook and YouTube as Saloni Music, and Spotify as Saloni.
And you got a website as well?
Oh, yes, www.salonimusic.com.
Because you're only one of the few artists who've got a website that not many artists do these days, which is really cool.
I mean, it's easy for people to find stuff. So, you know what? There you go. And when I release merch and stuff, which I hopefully will do sometime soon, it will be on that website.
Well, it's been fantastic. You know what? I could actually carry on talking to you, Saloni, but I'm not going to keep you, honestly. So I'm just going to say, thank you so much for your time. And guys, if you hang on, so I'll have a chat with you afterwards. We'll have to go. So guys, thank you so much for listening. And that was Saloni. Please check it out. Her music's fantastic. And it doesn't matter what language you speak in terms of South Asian context, you'll find something that you like with Saloni. At least I did. That's my experience with her music. So check her out, support her. And I really hope she goes far and far and just represents us in the mainstream. Honestly,
yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. It's really nice speaking to you.
Okay, I'm just going to stop the podcast, so thank you guys, and if you can just leave a like and a review for me, that'd be great. Thanks.